I'm Sally Rogers from the University of California, Davis, and I'm here to talk with you some about the implementation of this project in which we're trying to assist people in very typical community settings and very underserved settings to implement and to increase their use of empirically based practices in their classrooms. And I'm the PIs of one of the sites, the site in California, and I want to acknowledge both the leadership of Sam and the organization skills of Anne, which have made this huge project go so well, relatively speaking, and also the my site team, which Lisa Sullivan is our project coordinator, and Anne Master George, Lori Vismara, and Aaron Staubel are the team who are out in the schools. So it's been an amazing learning experience. So this whole approach of translational science from educational lab settings into the community is part of a kind of science called implementation research, which is getting more and more press these days. And there's been very nice work by several authors. I think a manual that Dean Fixon, who's at the University of North Carolina, has written is particularly useful for people like me who are working in lab-based settings and then trying to translate that work into communities. And I just want to share with you the definitions of this, because it's useful to think about what the goal is here. And one of the definition of implementation research is the scientific study of methods to promote the use of research to reduce inappropriate care. The second principle is that this includes the study of interventions that allow professionals to use research findings effectively. And that when you're doing this kind of research or practice and thinking about it, there are really two levels of activity that are going on all the time. Two levels of activity and two levels of assessment, both process assessment and summative assessment. You have the intervention level of procedures in which the child or the adult, the person who is the target of receiving the intervention, that's one target for the whole experience. But the implementation level target is the person who will be delivering the intervention, the community-based person. And so you really have to have an entire set of implementation processes defined for the provider in the community, and then a set of processes that will be delivered by that provider to the target person who's receiving it. And of course, then those two processes of behavior change also involve two levels of assessment. We need to be assessing to what degree is the new implementer learning and delivering the process that's being involved, and to what extent is the target of those interventions changing in result to it. So it's a complex kind of approach in which you have several targets, several levels of intervention, and several kinds of data collection going on all at once. And then finally, one of the important points that I've gotten from Fixon's work is the critical aspect of fidelity and the importance of getting high fidelity for EBPs in communities. He points out that low quality implementations are unlikely to generate good outcomes. And if people who are learning these processes are not getting good outcomes, they are not going to continue the practice. So, and there are good database challenges to the idea that you cannot implement high quality EBPs at high levels of fidelity in community settings. These can be done. There are many evidences of this going on in many kinds of sites, and I think it's very important for us to know that we need to set our sights high and to expect that the teaching staff will learn these skills in the same way that we expect the students who are receiving them will progress. Now, one of the important points that I've gotten both from working with Sam and from moving into this kind of work is the idea that systems change and change in children are linked processes. And for those of you who've been trained in developmental psychology may remember this model from 1976, the year that Uri Bronfenbrenner provided this theoretical model in which he called ecological systems change theory, in which he suggested that any change in child development is the result of multiple levels of influence. At the center of this, the microsystem, and what we're talking about is the child and the child's dispositions, the child's talents and needs, the child's impact on other people is at the center of this. And the next level is the mesosystem, which are the persons, the objects, the symbols that child is interacting with on a daily basis. Here are the learning opportunities that are coming in the direct environment on a day-by-day basis. And so, and then the third, and those are what we think of when we think about changing children, its behaviors. But the next level, which he called the exosystem, is really the level, the interaction level that's wrapped around the level right before it. When we're talking about daily teachers or parents, the next level, the exosystem, is the school administration, the school culture and the community culture and their attitudes about disability, child change, special education, and the values and attitudes of the school towards the children in it. And these are affecting the teachers on a daily basis. And those systems are affected by the macro system, by the next level, the state politics of disability, the state education support for special education, the voice of parent advocacy groups in that community, the level of public funding and public support for that. That level of system has impact every day on the level before it. And so what you really have are interacting systems in which each level is embedded. It's not a tower or a pyramid. It really is these cycles of embeddedness in which each system is reacting to each other and in relation to it, and all of these are feeding into the daily interactions of the child and the learning experiences. Now, I just analyzed that level for children, but we can do the exact same thing for teachers when we think about the teacher as the or the school classroom staff as the target of change. The mesosystem are the daily encounters that parent or teacher has with their peers, the physical resources around them, and the supports that they have for change. The next level is the school district administration or the extended family. The final level is, again, the state level. So we need to think about the levels as they affect one target, who are the teaching staff, and the other target, who are the child. The last concept I'm going to pull into this is this idea of sustainability. We do this kind of work because we want to make long-lasting change. We want to help schools adapt long-lasting differences, and we want the things that they're learning around the children we're working with to expand outward to the other children in their classroom in a long-term basis. But sustainability, you can think of that as the stability of your implementation processes over the long term, require a number of pieces to it. They require expertise locally to sustain the activity when the consultants step out. It requires learning materials and leadership for the people who are trying to carry this out. It requires funding because this takes time and constant input, and it requires infrastructure. So what fosters adult change? We know this. When we want to learn to do something new or change our own behavior, we need knowledge about what we're changing. We need motor learning, which takes declarative learning and concepts down into our motor system and makes it automatic and comfortable and easy to do. We need the mesosystem we're talking about to support the change that we're trying to make. And we need feedback and contingency management about our own goals. And this is the case whether we're trying to change our behavior with our spouse, or change yelling at our kids, or lose a little weight, or increase our exercise. These are the processes of adult behavior change. And these are what we have to think about providing all of the school staff and parents who are involved in the implementation process. They need knowledge about autism, and they need to know about needs-based assessment so that they can develop appropriate intervention goals. Then they need to know about evidence-based practice so that they can apply them. And every person in the system is going to have to teach somebody else. The teachers are going to have to teach the aides. The speech pathologist is going to have to teach her other colleagues. Everybody's feeding information into parents. And so they have to have it at that deep level, which allows for teaching and not just doing. In terms of habits, we've talked about goal setting, identifying new habits, practicing new habits, and having ways to reflect on what they've done and assess their own progress in goals. And this requires hands-on support or technical assistance. We all know people do not learn from workshops, and they don't learn from being told or from reading a book. They need someone to run their new ideas by. How does this sound? How's this plan going to work? They need feedback on their new deliveries of EBPs. They need help or evidence around data collection systems and how to use the data. And again, they need self-assessment tools for their daily motor practices and physical practices. And all of this ends up in a package of evaluation in which an individual, any of us, engaging in behavior change, as well as the people we're talking about, need to be able to assess what have they learned, what do they need to learn, what kinds of things can they do, what skills do they still need to establish, and how are they changing, how is the child changing, how are the parents who were not happy in this classroom before changing, and how is this affecting the school environment. And so we have to use all the models that we know about adult learning and adult behavior change in order to maximize the availability of resources for implementing practices that will change children. Successful implementation practices requires that we think about change at every level. And the only way that we'll know whether we've accomplished it is to measure it. We as consultants are the change agents, and we need to make sure that we are having multi-level impact in order to support implementation, child change, and sustainability. Our implementation practices need to address the macro system at the regional and state level supports, the attitudes and priorities for state change and programming for children with ASD. We need to increase the optimism of local administrators, supervisors, lunchroom supervisors, principals, and general ed staff to understand the ways that children with ASD can be integrated into the school environment and can change week by week. We need to, of course, to interact with the teaching staff, as we've talked about, with a careful and systematic approach to learning and implementation of what you're learned, and self-change and self-management on a daily basis. And if we can accomplish those things together, this should result in the change at the microsystem level of child and family, which is the goal that we had in the first place, the reason for implementing empirically based practices. And now I'm going to turn the podium over to Lisa Sullivan, who will talk with you about how we've taken this conceptual levels in the National Professional Development Center for Autism Spectrum Disorders and actually implemented this in specific state activities. Lisa?
Thank you, Sally. Yes, I'm hoping to tie together the 3 to 4 previous presentations you've heard, because pieces from all of those different presentations build into our project, the National Professional Development Center. So I'll be sharing what our model looks like as we work with our state partners, and also sharing a little bit of preliminary data, outcome data from the measures that we're using. So in terms of what, building on what Sally just talked about, the systems level approach to change, our project works across systems levels. So we start with the state level leadership. They develop a strategic plan for implementing evidence-based practices across the state. And then we work with state trainers in regions of the state and develop state training teams. And then we work with school administrators and districts, and then teachers and school teams, and then building down to target students and children and their families. So as you can see, we try all our activities really cover all those different systems levels. So in our work with state partners, we work in 4 main areas. We've developed evidence-based practice content materials, professional development materials, technical assistance activities, and a process for that, and evaluation tools. So in terms of the evidence-based practice content, as Sam Odom outlined earlier, we've established 24 evidence-based practices, and we've developed resources for educators and school teams to use those practices in school settings. And the primary resources we have for those are the online internet modules. And the modules contain an overview of the practice, the research base that was established as the criterion to make that an evidence-based practice. We have step-by-step instructions on how to use that practice. We have implementation checklists to monitor the fidelity of implementation. And then we have the actual research base articles. In addition, there are a variety of resources, including videotaped examples, case studies, discussion questions, and activities that school teams can use when working to learn the evidence-based practices. We've also developed content in the area of coaching and training materials. And all of those different, those four areas that I showed you at the beginning do overlap. So some of the professional development pieces are also involve the content development. So the first piece of the professional development activities that we've developed are an online introductory course, sort of an autism 101 course, so that all of the participants in our project, everyone in the state, across those different systems levels, takes an introductory course so that the level of knowledge is shared across different levels and everyone speaks a common language. Then we provide a 3 to 5 day summer intensive training workshop, which covers specific targeted evidence-based practices that are really determined by the state's needs. And we also cover content regarding the autism program scale that Ann Cox spoke about and the goal attainment scale that Lisa Rubel outlined. So we train our state teams and school teams on how to use those different tools. In addition, we have the evidence-based practice modules, which I spoke about earlier. And then another piece of the professional development is monthly coaching and consultation. So the state trainers go to the school sites monthly and work with the teams and establish their professional development goals and help them work towards those goals. The technical assistance component of the project really involves working with state trainers and helping them to disseminate the information regarding evidence-based practices to school teams. And during that process, they share the systems that we've developed and the resources for actually implementing evidence-based practices. And the core component of this technical assistance piece is, once again, the monthly visits to the school sites to do observations, help with data collection, and really work with the team towards their goals and ultimately working towards progress on student goals. The evaluation component of the project cuts across all of our different activities. So we collect pre and post data on the use of evidence-based practices by the school teams. We also collect child-level outcome data using the goal attainment scaling process. We collect program quality data using the APERS scale that was described earlier. And then we also send home family surveys pre and post implementation to get a sense of family satisfaction with the implementation process and student progress. So I'd like to share just three different components of the outcome data that we've collected. So one is the overall program, the school program data. Then there's the use of the evidence-based practices by the trainers and school teams. And then there's the individual student progress. So this data represents 28 model sites that we've worked with in different states across the country. In terms of the overall program quality measure, the APERS, this is pre and post for just 17 schools, preschool and elementary. Don't have time to cover middle and high school data, but the effect size was 1.13 from beginning of the school year to the end of the school year. In terms of the use of specific evidence-based practices, this is a list. The blue is prior to partnering with us on the project and going through the implementation process, the professional development training, and then the red bars are at the end of the project. So the increase in the use of specific evidence-based practices. And then finally, in terms of student outcome level data using the goal attainment scaling process, this is data from 236 students. As you can see, 76 of those students met their goals, so met that 0 point by the end of the school year. But what's really encouraging and nice to see is that the number of students who made more than expected progress on their goals, which is the plus one, or much more than expected progress on their expected goal on their goals by the end of the year, end of the school year. So just in summary, I think we're all very encouraged to see that systems level change can happen, and really from state sort of the state plans that we help states develop, to really promoting sustainability across the state to those student level outcomes and student progress measures. But as we know, and as Sally mentioned, this all requires really establishing goals across those different systems levels and monitoring that process as you go along. And really focusing both on inside and outside forces that are a part of change, so resources that are available, including time, state budgets. And it's been interesting just working with different state partners, seeing how each state has different needs, and there's a different context that we're stepping into with each of our states in terms of, you know, they may have had a great deal of training in the coaching piece, but not in evidence-based practices. So really just responding to the context that we're stepping into. And really just promoting sustainability, as Sally also talked about, because we don't want this the implementation of evidence-based practices to disappear when our project kind of ends our partnership with states. We want it to continue and really keep progressing and have this kind of ripple effect across the state. So systems level change, of course, we need to acquire new knowledge and habits, and a big piece of that is that self-evaluation measurement that, so it's not just some outside force coming in and talking to school teams about what they need to be doing, but really having them look at what their needs are and what they need to change. And this also includes children developing, as they get older, their own goals and require sort of thinking about what goals they're setting for themselves. So thank you very much. I hope that gave you a good summary of the National Professional Development Center. And really the goal is to develop this trainer of trainers models with our state partners so that they can keep continuing to promote the use of evidence-based practices across their state. I don't know if there are questions. Yeah. Are there questions? Oh, good.
I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about how you measured the specific evidence-based practice. There were a lot listed, so I'm just wondering if teachers chose which ones they were going to use, and if they told you, I'm using it now, watch me, or?
That's a really good question. So that all ties back into the goal attainment scaling process. So when we start with the student level goals, then the school teams work together with the state trainers to determine which evidence-based practices are the most appropriate for that individual child. And that goes back to really, you know, looking at a whole systems level again of what has worked in the past with that child, what their motivators are, what their family needs are, looking at all of that. So they select specific evidence-based practices and then work through the module materials and work with their state trainers and then use the Fidelity implementation checklist to monitor that implementation across the year. No, the trainers monitor them. The state trainers monitor their implementation of the practice from beginning of the year, and then they go monthly. So that's a big part of that monthly visit, is looking at the implementation process. Good question.
Thank you very much for these interesting talks. I have a question. Do you also assess like quantitative measures, because you just mainly use qualitative measures on the quality of implementation, but quantitative measures on the progress of the child besides the goal attainment scale, for example, like improving autistic behavior or school-based progress or anything like that?
We don't, as part of our project, I don't know if you want to speak to that, Sam, but we do look at information from the families in terms of how satisfied they are with their child's progress over the course of the year. So that would certainly be a part of that. And then really it's related to their IEP goals. So if they've made progress on those goals across the year, that would be our quantitative piece. But we don't look at other behaviors.
But one of their goals could include an autism-specific
exactly.
Behavior, like reduction of screaming or increase in use of more appropriate communications to communicate protest or that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I'm just asking because it's quite a big difference to these randomized controlled trials where you look at
right.
treatment effectiveness. I mean, there you have this usually
right.
very sort of autism
right.
behavior focused summary measure, and you just have one outcome measure. And it would be really interesting to see if you would have the same effect sizes with this with this the trial to implement this effective programs into everyday life. Mm-hmm. I think maybe you should also compare these kinds of treatments.
Yeah, the you have to understand that the goal of this project is to change teacher behavior and to increase the use of EBPs in classrooms. The goal of the project is not to accelerate children's learning rates, but to increase the use of EBPs and to have that reflected, increasing child academic progress on their set objectives. So it's a different goal than in the randomized controlled trials that are testing specific treatments, and so that requires a different assessment approach.
And that is a very important question. The resources that we had to put into evaluation were less than we would be able than we would need to address that specific question. We've actually talked about moving this into an efficacy kind of study that would address those questions, but we'll see what happens in the future. So. Please, we have a few more minutes.
It's a really terrific model, and thank you for sharing it with us today. My question is, because it's a systems level intervention and model, are you tracking either formally or informally how education-based practices might then be disseminated to peripheral schools that weren't necessarily your site schools? Just curious.
Do you want to talk?
You should talk about that, Sam.
Well, we are. I can't say we have done it. We do actually do it systematically. So the year, both during the years in which we are working in the school, and then in the years after. So after our 2-year involvement, we follow up and identify if they're continuing to use the systems that we've shared with them. So in some of our states, just really take off. They in one or two cases jump ahead of us in terms of moving out toward broader implementation.
It's a requirement of a state to come into it that they will take on 3 additional sites in the second year and 3 additional sites in the third year. It's like a pyramid scheme. And that's part of the agreement that allows them to receive the services. And we support them in that second year, and they do all the teaching with us coaching them through all the seminar institutes and all of that. So there really is this apprenticeship model going on, so that by the time we're finished with the second year, they have done every role that we have done. We have backed them up on it, and they have started and finished 3 independent sites, which we've provided consultation for, but they have done all the work for. And then we make sure that they have another set for the next year, the first year that we're gone. So that's built into it, into the process, is that they will start their own sites and continue them at least for 2 years after they're done. It's 3 years that's required by the agreement, right, Sam? Not 5, I was hoping 5, but I think it's 3. I think they're...
Yeah.
I think that's right. Yeah. We do follow-up interviews, Anne is saying. Anne is saying that we follow up with those new sites at the end of each year for at least 2 or 3 more years so that we have data on the implementations that the states have done as well as the ones that we've done.
Okay. Another question?
I really appreciate the fact that there's been so much thought put into sort of the idea of what changes adult behavior. But I was wondering about sort of at the most basic level, how you either address or have accounted for just at the teacher level, their motivation to change.
Well, there's an informal process that we're using, which would map onto Prochanska's levels of change. We have gone into situations in which there's a teacher there who doesn't want to be there, who's been assigned to be there, who wants no part of this process, wants nobody in her classroom. And we just had one of those this year in one of our California sites. And over the year, you know, our consultants use different approaches. It's very much about how can I help you? I'm just here to help. And you know, it's dependent on the consultant to make sure that the first thing you do is successful. And so you're really there to build a relationship, demonstrate that you have skill, and help a person increase their motivation as they start to realize that there is help and that they do have goals for their children and that the children are capable of change, which is often something that people who've been in that same classroom with that same child for multiple years, they don't have that idea anymore. So it's certainly an interpersonal process with every single person that we're working with. And no, that's not an articulated part of the model.
Good point. During the first years, there is some self-selection when we first begin working with states, because we want them to have positive experiences and a positive model that they can establish for other teachers or professionals to come and observe in the state. So those teachers are selected because they're motivated. But then as the model progresses in the second year, it may well be less so. Paul.
Wow. You know, I'm just back there with this really warm feeling. As someone who has
done
this kind of microscopic, having adults and children enhance each other's adaptation to life, and wanting to make a difference, but feeling overwhelmed at the complexity of the system. One of the best things that can happen from a project, rather a conference like this, is gratitude, in the sense that you're giving to the community. And I know what you're doing is really hard, and I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks very much. I really appreciate that, and especially for my colleague. Another last question, did you have?
It's hard to follow that with a question.
No, please.
But great, I'm grateful too. Do you include related service providers in your training?
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yep, that's an easy question, we do.
And I wanted to say one thing additionally about the teachers who get selected. The states all have to apply. But we've certainly been in cities in which the school that is chosen and the classroom that's chosen is chosen because the parents have been extremely unhappy and there's due process language going on, and that this is brought in to help the parents see that attention is going to be paid. And so it is not the teaching level staff are not chosen by us. They're chosen by their systems, and they come in for a variety of reasons those schools are targeted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. So we're at the end of our time today. You all have been a great audience sticking around here on a nice afternoon in California. So thank you very much.